Begin the current daf, Masechta Basra, daf Nun Zayin. Begin on the bottom, daf Nun Vav and Beis, two lines up from the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara concludes explaining the Mishnah from the previous daf. And that is, the Mishnah was explaining the halacha that we mentioned in this perek regarding the halacha of Cheskes Gimel Shanim, that if someone is in possession of someone else's land for more than 3 years, uncontested, that will prove, that's an indicator that he bought, if he claims that, this field. Now, since he needs to have a chazakah of 3 years, each year is its own quantum element. So therefore, if there's two witnesses on the first year, two in the second year, two in the third year, they will all combine together to create a unit of testimony that he's been on this field for 3 years, and therefore that verifies it, and that's a valid chazakah. Now, on that, the Mishnah concludes that the halacha would same apply where you have shloisha achet, if you have three different brothers on each different year, the echad mistarfeim on, and another random person goes and combines with the three of them, Hare Elu Shalash Idias, says the Mishnah, these are considered three different types of testimonies, because if it was one unit of testimony, that would be invalid, because you need to have unrelated people that are not Kraivim to say Edus, and here you have three different brothers. But since they're each testifying on a different year, they're independent, and therefore that's going to be valid, because each one is saying his testimony with this other person. Now, however, says the Mishnah, Hein Edus Achas La'azama. But regarding the halacha of Hazama, as we explained in the previous daf, where they should get the punishment that they tried doing to someone else, which was incorrect, they were lying, then if it turns out that they couldn't have been there and they had the same testimony trying to make the original owner lose, now they're going to lose, but that's all together. It's only if they're all of four of them, the three brothers and this random person, are all Huzim, that then all of them are going to have to pay their third that they tried, or depending on the numbers, how each one tried making the person lose, that's how much they're going to lose themselves. Now, related to the halacha of the Mishnah, as we continue top of Nandayin and Manalaf, the Gemara brings the following incident. Hahushtar, there was a certain document that the lender needed to be mekayim, what's called, he needed to validate the document to show that it's a true kosher document, that it wasn't forged. So he has to go ahead and verify the two witnesses who were signed on the document, who are verifying that this guy borrowed $1,000 from him, whatever the amount was. So on that, the Gemara says, that there were two people who were signed on this document, and Shachav Chad Menayeh, but one of the two individuals who were signing it, had already passed away. And this was before he had a chance to validate the document. Now, the significance of this is because had none of them passed away, then each one of these two witnesses would have came by himself and testified and verified his own signature, and he would not have required anyone else to combine with them. Rather, he's believed to say, this is Ksav Yodi, this is my signature, this is my handwriting, as the Mishnah teaches in the second parak of Masechet Ksubas, Daf Chofim Abayz, where if each one of the witnesses signed on the document come themselves to verify the document and say, yeah, this is my signature, another guy comes and says, this is my signature, the Chacham over there say that you don't need to have anyone else combine with the witnesses, rather each one is believed to say, Zeg Ksav Yodi. Now the Gemara explains the opinion of the Chacham is, the reason why that works, is because they're each testifying regarding the money that was that was written about in the document. They're both essentially testifying together, two witnesses, that we saw the loan and we signed on it. So therefore it's enough with two witnesses, meaning each one is testifying just like he testified originally when he saw the loan. Now each one is testifying, although he's saying Edus on one of the signatures, so seemingly you would need to have two witnesses on each signature. On that, says the Gemara, but they know two is enough, meaning one on each one of the signatures, because the two of them are actually testifying regarding the original loan. So we don't need any more than each one to testify on his own. He doesn't need to have anyone else to combine with him to testify in his own signature. Now, that is what our story differs, because since now one of these witnesses passed away, the Gemara there says that according to the Rabbanon, you would need to have two people from the marketplace to testify regarding the signature of the one witness who had passed away, and the living one, who is still alive, he could testify himself on his own signature. But the living witness cannot combine with one other person from the marketplace to testify regarding the signature of his colleague who had passed away. Now the reason for that is because since we explained that they're both testifying not really on their signatures, but they're actually testifying regarding the original loan, so when this guy says, this is my signature, that automatically is half the money based on his testimony. And that's why it usually works with that other guy testifying on his signature, where now the two of them are together testifying on the whole money. Now, but since this living guy is testifying on his own signature, and as we said, he doesn't need to have anyone else combined with him to testify, so it comes out that already half the money is based on him. Now, when then he goes and combines with one other person to testify on the signature of the other one who had passed away already, it comes out that that other half of the money, a quarter of it is going based on that the living witness. So it comes out that all the money, except a quarter, which is three quarters, are all being taken away from the borrower based on this witness's testimony. Now the problem with that is because the pasuk says a pishnaim edim, based on the testimony of two witnesses, yakum davar, which that translates into half of the thing is based on the testimony of one of them, and half of the thing, meaning the money, is based on the testimony of the other one. But here, since when one of them passed away, the living witness cannot combine with another person from the market to testify regarding the signature of the one who passed away, because then it would be three quarters from one person and one quarter from someone else. Rather, you need to have two people from the marketplace to testify on that guy's signature, which then you'll have half from them and then half from him. But you cannot have more than half being taken by one of the witnesses, which in this case it'll be three quarters. So therefore, rather, says the Gemara, so what did they do? So the brother of the living witness, he came, and he came to combine with another random person from the marketplace, to testify regarding the signature of the one who had passed away, as we explained, because you need to have two people from the marketplace to testify regarding the signature of the one who passed away. So says the Gemara, Sav Ravin Lamemer, Ravina thought to say, that Hainamas Nitin, that this is a kosher way of doing it, like the halacha of our Mishnah. Because although the halacha is that two brothers are possible to say one testimony, because they're only considered like one witness, although they're two people, since they're brothers, they're relatives, we view them as one. So even so, thought Ravina to say that just like in our Mishnah, that it's kosher in the case of Gimel Achin ve'echad mitzdarfi mohin, our Mishnah said that three brothers with one random person are believed to say testimony in one piece of land. Now the reason for that is because since this brother is testifying in this year and this brother is testifying in a different year, so therefore they're kosher even though they're different brothers. So therefore thought Ravina to say the same thing is in our story here, where the living witness is testifying on his own signature, and his brother is testifying on the other guy's signature. So although, yes, they're both working together regarding one loan, but since it's on a different element of that of what's happening, where he's on one signature, meaning his own, and his brother is testifying regarding the other guy's signature, is on something else. So it's just like that halacha of our Mishnah, where although they're all working towards this guy getting the land that he's being machzik on, but since they're testifying regarding different years, we will allow the testimony of different brothers on the same land because they're on different years. So Ravina thought to say that this is a valid way of verifying the dead witness's signature. On that, Omer Rav Ashi, he disagreed. He says, no, me dummy, can you compare this to halacha of our Mishnah? Hasam over there in the Mishnah, you're not going to be removing all the money sans a quarter, meaning three quarters of the money, based on the testimony of the brothers. Only half of the money is going to be coming out from the brothers, and half the money is going to be from this nachri, from this random person. And that's why it's going to be kosher for this ages, because essentially what you have in our Mishnah is that all 3 years you have to have based on two witnesses' testimony. So this one guy is saying that half the testimony in all 3 years, and all the brothers are saying each year the other half of the testimony. So the reason why it's kosher is because generally the halacha, why it's puzzle, that the Torah says the testimony of witnesses of brothers or any other relatives, is because we only consider the brothers as one witness. Now, regarding the chazakah of the 3 years, even if, yes, we're going to consider the brothers as one person, but that's not a problem, because another person is combining with them in every one of those 3 years. So that helps for the 3 years if that other person saw the chazakah for 3 years. So half is coming out through this one person, and half is coming out through this, quote, other person, who is all three brothers. Yeah, that we consider them as one person. But hacha will be here by this story of this document, nafik nechi riva demimayin, it's going to come out that all the money, meaning besides a quarter, meaning three quarters of the money, are going to be taken apumidaachi based on the testimony of the brothers. And therefore, since, as we said, that we consider the brothers as if they're one witness, so it's going to come out that one person is going to be taking three of the quarters, and the other one is going to be taking only a quarter. And that's a problem, as we said, because alpishneim edim yakum david, because this living brother who's saying testimony on his own signature, Now, his brother, who we consider as an extension, as one as him, is saying the other quarter of that other half, which now the brothers, who we're considering as one, is taking three quarters, that other Nachri from the Shuk, that other random person, is going to be saying on a quarter. So it comes out that one, quote, person, who we're calling these two brothers, like one witness, is taking three quarters, and that other one a quarter. That's a problem, because no one witness, or even brothers who are like one witness, could take shlosh lechalakim, three quarters. He could only take half, because a pishnem eid miyakam deva means one witness half and the other witness only half. And therefore, Sidravashi is not comparable to a Mishnah, where, yes, even though we can combine them because they're saying on different elements, and here too, but the difference is that over there, it's only going to be half from the brothers, and here it's going to be three quarters from the brothers, and that's what's going to be possible. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on this theme regarding halachas of chazaka of Cheskes Gimel Shonim. Says the Mishnah, Elu Dvarim, these things, in other words, these that we're going to say at the end of the Mishnah, that are types of utilities which the Mishnah says that a person uses in his friend's domain, that if he's going to use it for 3 years and his friend does not protest, Sheyesh Lehen Chazaka, that does and could establish a chazaka for the one who's being machzik. And he could claim that you gave me the rights to use this utility because you gifted it to me or because you sold me these rights, where, as we'll see at the end of the Mishnah, are types of tashmishin utilities which are permanent type. As the Gemara says later on, Amud Beis, where a person is generally particular about them if it's done without his permission. Now, therefore, in 3 years' time, if he does it uncontested, it's going to be a chazaka, similar to the case of when he has pits, when he digs in, or beis hashlacha, and all those things we actually said in the beginning of the perek, because since they're permanent type of tashmishin, so therefore they're like the chazaka in the actual land itself, which that's the halacha, like we said regarding karka, it's going to be through a cheskes gimel shana. So that, again, we'll see at the end of the Mishnah. But first, says the Mishnah, Ve'el Dvarim She'en Lem Chazaka. These are things that do not establish a chazaka, which all these things are things which are more metaltalin, meaning they're movable things. So although that they're being done in someone else's property, they're not considered a utility of permanence. And therefore, the owner of the courtyard, which this guy is doing in his domain, is not so particular. It could, for up to 4 years or 5 years. Therefore, that will not establish a chazaka to say, hey, why didn't you protest? Obviously, that this is, I had these rights because you gave it to me or because you sold it to me. And that, it's not true. Because the Bala Chatzar, it could say that I wasn't particular to protest. Because you didn't make a full-fledged chazaka like people usually make when they want to prove that this is theirs, which does something permanent in the ground, I wasn't losing anything major, and therefore I wasn't so particular. Now it's 5 years later. Now I am particular, now get off. And it could tell them that it could get off. What are these things that are not a chazaka? So let's say, he put his animals in this guy's courtyard. Again, it's not a permanence in the ground of a certain type of tashmish. He could just move his animal off. So that, even 4 or 5 years ago, he doesn't have to be particular to be meicha. Or tana richayim v'kirayim, or if he puts an oven, or a mill, or a stove, which again, these are movable items. So to a mill must be told by like a type of a handmill. Or megal tana geimel, where he brings up his chickens or in this guy's courtyard. Or v'nosin zvali b'chatz, or he puts his fertilizer in the guy's courtyard. Again, all these things are in a chazaka, they're not a chazaka. They don't establish, they're not a permanent type of a tashmish in the guy's land. Aval, but asa mechitza lebehemtu gevoya asar tfacham. Let's say he doesn't just put his animal in that guy's field. He then, not only does he keep his animals, he now puts up a wall that are 10 tefachim high. That's already, like we said in the Mishnah of Membezim and Aleph, called a geder. Well, that's a chazaka. And all the area that's within the mechitzas that he made, he could claim, well, look at me, I put up walls. Obviously, if I've had this 3 years and you're in protest, it was because I bought these rights. Same thing is v'chein l'tana, v'chein l'karayim, v'chein l'rechayim. If let's say he puts up walls for the oven or the stove or the mill, these are all considered permanent types of tashmish in that guy's land. That is a chazaka. Or hichnis tanagulim techa bayis. Let's say he doesn't just bring up the chickens in that guy's courtyard. Rather, he brings the chickens into that guy's house for a period of 3 years. On that, for sure, people are particular. And if he doesn't protest, it's his loss, because for sure, he gave this guy the rights and is with his permission. And therefore, it is a chazaka. Or va'asa makam lezivle amuk shloisha. He didn't just put a fertilizer. He made an area that was 3 tefachim deep so that the fertilizer should not be dispersed. He's really making indentations in this guy's land. Or he makes a mechitza, a partition that's 3 tefachim high. So and that says the Mishnah reads a chazaka, that's already more of a permanence that would establish a chazaka. Now, however, the Gemara asks, Maishna Reisha, what's the difference ultimately between the halacha of the Reisha when we said that, let's say you just put any animal in that guy's courtyard without any walls, where the Mishnah said that's not going to be a chazaka, or Maishna Seifa? And why is the Seifa that much more different when we said that, oh, if you put up a mechitza, oh, that you already acquired the rights in that guy's yard? Now, the reason for the Gemara's question is because the assumption right now is we're talking about a random person that doesn't have any rights or lives in this courtyard. And that the Mishnah is saying that in the Reisha, that he does not have a chazaka. That the Gemara is bothered by, but why? Why is the Reisha that much more different than the Seif of the Mishnah? For sure, people in the courtyard are particular about a random guy that brings his animals over here. And to the contrary, from the fact that he does not protest, we should say for sure that they gave the rights and they acquired the area in this courtyard for this guy to put his animals. And why is it not a chazaka? Which the Gemara later on is going to explain, because we're talking about shutfin, we're talking about partners. But for right now, the Gemara assumes that we're talking about random person, so why is the Reisha not a chazaka? So Amar Ula Ula gives an answer, and he says as follows. He says, Kol she'ilu b'nichse hagir kanam, anything that in the properties of a convert, who we said that he dies without any children, and whoever wants to come, call a kaidim zacha, go ahead and get it, because he has no inheritors. So anything by the properties of a convert, that if someone would go ahead and he would acquire that rights, for example, as we said in the Mishnah of Nodal Mar Aleph, that let's say he makes a mechitza, or he digs a little bit. So that says Ula, that's where we say, for the halachas of our Mishnah, that b'nichsi chaver kana, that so too in the properties of his friend, he acquires. In other words, what does it mean acquire? It means that would establish a chazaka. Now, but the actual kinyan is not through digging a little bit. Rather, that would be either through money or by being gifted. Now, in actuality, this comparison that Ula is making to answer the question on our Mishnah is flawed in the sense of that we learned in the Sefer of the Mishnah that if a person puts his roosters in someone else's house for a period of 3 years, that's going to be a chazaka. Whereas by nichse hager, if you want to acquire the properties of a ger, that's specifically not going to be a chazaka, as we learned in previous dafim, because it has to be something that you did to the land itself that made it better, which is not the case by putting chickens in the guy's house. So the reason why the Gemara doesn't ask that is because actually soon we'll have a question from Rav Sheshes, who asks even more better on this opinion of Ula. But that's what Ula's saying, and he's trying to say this as a way of explaining the halacha of the Mishnah, what's different the Reisha and the Seifa, because of, you have to do something that like by the Nichsa Geir would be Kaina, which is an actual Kinyan, so to the halacha would apply by Nichsa Chaver that you'd be Kana, meaning for halachas of Chazakis, which is not a Kinyan itself, but a Raya, which is something that you did in the land itself, which is like the case of the Seifa. But kol she'ilu b'nichsa ger lo kana, but anything that if in the properties of a convert would not acquire, meaning it would be what's called a shvacha, a flawed type of a chazaka, which would not be kaina. In other words, in the case of the properties of a ger that you want to acquire right away, no, actually, the Rashbam says the same thing would apply regarding acquiring the land of someone else who's selling it to you. Where if he says that lechazek v'kaneh, go ahead and do a chazaka and thereby acquire, and then he goes and he does a chazaka ru'ua, a weak chazaka, he does not acquire. For example, let's say he puts his animals over there, which are all the cases of the Reisha of our Mishnah. Or he puts his oven or a stove over there, which is not like we said, no'al v'gadar. The chazaka of one of the three ways of acquiring karka is kesef shtar chazaka. Chazaka has to be that you did something that made a betterment in the land. You made a wall, you made a door, where if you just put your animals or your ovens, that didn't do any tikkun in the actual land itself, that would not be considered a way of acquiring whether nechse chaveroi, that he's saying for a kinyan, or nechse hager. So then, the halach is, benechse chaveroi leikana. So then also in the properties of his friend, he will not acquire, again, it's not precise in that way that the Rashbam explains, meaning regarding the halach of cheskes gimel shanim. Where if he says, I bought it, and the seller says, no, I did not sell it to you, so it's not going to be considered a chazaka to be considered in the place of witnesses that it was sold, which generally that's what a chazaka does, because he didn't do anything regarding the actual land itself. That's how Ula answers, yeah, just like b'nichse ager, so to hear for the halacha of cheskes gimel shanim, where the reisha, you didn't do anything in the karka itself, you just put in your animals. that's not going to be a valid for Cheskes Gemashanim. In the safe, when you made like walls, you did stuff that are in the permanence of the land, that would establish a Cheskes Gemashanim, just like it would acquire B'Nechs Ager, and that's the difference between the Reish and the safe. On this interpretation of Ula, Maskeb Rav Shesha. Rav Shesha asks, and he says, V'klalohu? Is this really a general rule that you're comparing the halacha of Cheskes Gemashanim, which is not a kinyan? Rather, it's contingent on particularity about hakpadas, where that's something where we say it's symptomatic of saying, hey, you know, this guy for sure had bought it from you because, look, he's already been machzik for 3 years and you didn't say anything. How are you comparing that halacha of chazaka to the cheskes kinyan nichsa ger, to the chazaka of a kinyan, of acquiring the properties of a ker, which that's totally in tikkun hakarka, nothing to do with hakpada? Because, ask Rav Sheshes, we see clear differences between the two of them. Because if I rain near, take plowing. The benichsa ger kana, and the properties of a convert, that is considered an acquisition, but benichsa chaveru lai kana, but regarding the properties of a person's friend, meaning to establish a chazaka, that does not acquire. Because as the Gemara said on the Aflamad Zayin Mabeis, according to everybody, plowing is not a chazaka. To establish, to prove that this must be, even though you don't have documentation that you had bought it, whereas although by Nechsagir you would be kinda, even if you dig just a little bit, because that showed, that did something to the land itself, that's a kinyan of chazaka, but by the person's friend's property, meaning to show a cheskes gemashanim, that's not a kinyan, because to the contrary, the whole objective of cheskes gemashanim is to show that you went and you took stuff, like achilas peiris, but if you just plow and you didn't eat, to the contrary, the owner of the land didn't lose anything, because he'll plant and then this other guy will eat. So what exactly did you prove by plowing? So by nechsegeir, that would be a kinyan, but by nechsegeir would not be a kinyan. And another difference, the other way, we find vare chilus peiris. Regarding the consumption, the picking of the produce, where if, let's say, this guy ate on this other person's field, the peiris for 3 years, the achila of 3 years takes the place of testimony that this guy had bought the land from the owners, as we've been saying throughout the whole parak, but regarding the properties of a convert, that does not acquire, because that's not like we qualified the halacha of kinyan of chazaka on the nundalam and aleph. It's only by no'al v'gadr uparitz, where you have to go ahead and make a wall or close the door off. We actually, we said that the guy who picks the fruits of a tree, but they're picking it not for the betterment of the tree or the land, but rather to feed their animals, is not going to be a kinyan. So therefore, ask Rav Sheshes, how can you say this as an answer for the difference between the Reish and the Seifa by comparing the halacha of Cheskes Gemashanim to the halacha of Kinyan Chazaka, B'Nechsa Ger, when they're fundamentally different, as we see practical differences between the two of them, because Nechsa Ger is totally in Tikkun HaKarka, it's a halacha of Kinyan, whereas the halacha of Cheskes Gemashanim is totally in Hakpada of the Baal, nothing to do with the halachas of Nechsa Ger. So Elam Rav Nachman Amar Rabbi Baravu, he says, truth is that you're right. Regarding a random person that comes to bring his animals into someone else's courtyard, where he has no partnership rights in it at all, then you're right, the cases of the Reisha and the Seifa of our Mishnah would not be any different, and they would establish a Chazaka, because people of a courtyard don't generally allow a random person to do any type of utilities in their courtyard, unless the guy had permission. Now, if they don't protest within 3 years, then you're right, it would establish a chazaka, even if, let's say, the guy just brings in animals there or his chickens there. But as we continue to Amud Beis, says the Gemara, Hachen our Mishnah, b'chatzah hashut v'naskinen. We're actually talking about by a shared courtyard by different partners, where one of the partners himself brings his animals or his ovens or his garbage into the courtyard for 3 years, and none of the other neighbors from the courtyard protested. Now, generally, a courtyard is meant for coming and going, and not to have your animals or your objects there for a long time, because if you put in stuff over there, it's going to get in people's ways. Now, that's what the Reish and the Mishnah is saying, where if one of the neighbors of this courtyard put in his animals without creating a structure in the land itself, that that's not going to be a chazaka, because de'ba'amada kedi le'kapti. Because by just putting stuff, your objects, in the shared courtyard, that neighbors are not so particular one on the other until there comes a time when they need the space. And when they need it, then they'll be particular about it. And then they'll tell this guy, get rid of your stuff, because you don't have a chazaka with our silence. Because our silence doesn't mean anything, because we usually don't care. But now that we need the space, not get rid of your stuff. And therefore, that does not establish a chazaka. But I'm a chitza kapti. But regarding if one of the partners starts putting up walls, oh, that people are particular. and if they were silent and they did not protest for a period of 3 years, then for sure this one neighbor of the Korcha did it with permission, and therefore it does establish a chazaka. That's the difference between the Reish and the Seif, where if you just put stuff, that's not a chazaka. You made walls, that they would be particular, and therefore that would establish a chazaka. Now, this interpretation asks the Gemara, if one of the partners of this shared courtyard, one of the neighbors that all the houses open up to the shared courtyard, if he just put stuff in the courtyard, are you telling me that neighbors are not particular and therefore their silence for 3 years would not establish a chazaka? But what's not? We learn the Mishnah Masechet in the Dorm that seems to contradict this. The Mishnah says as follows. Hashutfin shenadru hanah zemizeh. Partners that took a vow forbidding themselves to have benefit one from the other, says the Mishnah, Asurin lichanis lechatzer. They're not allowed to go into their shared courtyard as long as they have not split up the courtyard yet. So each one of the neighbor, each one of these partners, if they're going to go into the shared courtyard, they're going to be going, it's every part is shared by him and his partner. So he's going to be violating the loyachal devara of his vow, because ultimately he's benefiting from his partner because he's in his courtyard too. Where we see that even though he's just standing there, it's what's called Hamada, he's not building anything in his partner's courtyard, his partner is particular. How do we see that? Because if this partner of this courtyard would not be particular, then he would be allowed to stand in his partner's courtyard, even though he took a vow forbidding benefit from him, because since that partner is not particular about people just standing there or putting things over there, so essentially it's like hefker, it's like ownerless of this of his courtyard to anyone to want to stand over there, and therefore regarding standing, it's like he has no portion or rights in it. So when this partner who took the neder forbidding benefit from him stands there, he's not really benefiting from it because it's like ownerless. So obviously you see from the Mishnah Maseches Nedarim that Hamodik Kedi, he is Makbid, and that's why it is forbidden from the Isra of Anah. So how could you say that in the Reish of a Mishnah does not establish a Chazaka by Shutfin, by just Hamada, by just putting things to stand over there? So Elamar of Nachman of Rabbi Abu, rather, he says a different interpretation. He says, Hacha, in our Mishnah, B'rechove Shalachari Bat Maskinan, we're talking about not just the chatzar. The chatzar generally was in front of the houses. They would have the shared courtyard of all the houses open up to it. There's also an area behind the houses called the rechava, which there people are not so particular because they don't use that as often. Whereas the chatzar, which is in front of the houses, that they need that space cleared because that's where people come and go over there into the Rishos Rabbim, to the street and come back. So therefore, there you're right. As we see in the Mishnah Masechet and the Dharm, they are particular about even if you just stand over there or put stuff over there, and therefore they're forbidden one with the other. But in our Mishnah, we're discussing the Rechava that's behind the houses, just putting stuff to, like the Reisha Mishnah says, people are not particular, and that's why it does not establish a Chazaka. But regarding putting up walls, even though it's only the Rechava, the area behind the houses, that's already a big thing, you're putting up walls, that they are particular, and therefore the Sefer of the Mishnah says that would establish a Chazaka. That's one interpretation. Rapapam, he says, truthfully, we could say that both our Mishnah over here and the Mishnah Masechet and the Dharm are b'chatzah hashutfin, are talking about a shared courtyard, which is in front of the houses, not behind the houses. Now, so how do we resolve the contradiction? Are people makbid about Hamada or not? So the answer is that because v'ikka dekapti, there are certain types of people that are particularly, even the people just put stuff in their courtyard. But v'ikka delekapti, are people that are not so particular, go ahead, put stuff there, we don't care, easy come, easy go. So therefore, the ramification how to explain our two Mishnayos are as follows. Gaba b'mayner, regarding monetary law, which is like an armistice regarding establishing a chazaka, there we say lekula, that in other words, we should go leniently and to say that partners are not particular one than the other, and that it is permitted for any one partner to put his animals in the shared courtyard as long as his neighbor, friend, partner is not particular on him. Now, the reason why that's called lekula is because essentially we're permitting, without knowing definitely, that one of the partners could put his animals, even though he didn't take permission from his partners in the shared courtyard. Now, the chiddush why that's called a kula is because elsewhere we say, like in Bab Metzidah from Aleph Min Aleph, that if someone borrows without a permission from someone else, like here using the shared courtyard for something that they might be particular, that is called a gasl. And here he's doing the same thing. He's putting his animals without permission, without acquiescence of them. That we're saying that although maybe they would be particular, but by Safik Mamun will go the Kula. Now that's why the Reish Mishnah says it's not going to establish a Chazaka, because since we're saying, at least because of Stamalukula by Mammon, that they're not particular. So why should that say he's not going to be a Chazaka? Because since his partner, his neighbor in the same courtyard, could tell the one who's being Machzik, oh, me? I'm from those that are not so particular. That's why I was silent, and therefore your Chazaka is not a valid Chazaka, and to the contrary. If you want to be Machzik, then you first have to bring proof that I'm from those people that are generally particular, and then your Chazaka would be a Chazaka. Now that's why it's not going to be a Chazaka, because anywhere where the Mi'aru, the one who's contesting, has a claim, an explanation why he did not protest, then that does not allow the Chazaka of the Machzik to be a Chazaka. Because it's all based partly on the fact that he wasn't Meicher. I wasn't Meicher, I'm not particular. So since we say by Mammon Lukula, where we say that we could assume that he's not particular, then it's not going to establish a Chazaka, as we see in the Reisha of our Mishnah. But Gabi Isura, but regarding prohibitory law, regarding partners that had taken a vow forbidding benefit one from the other, there, regarding Issa, we always say Luchumra, as a stringency. And therefore we say it's forbidden to enter into the shared courtyard, because maybe the partner will be from those who are particular. And there, whenever we have a suffix iser, daraisa, when you have a doubt regarding a biblical law, like the halacha of an eder, then we have to stringently say you can't go in because he might be from those who are particular, and then you are benefiting from him, and that's what's going to be also. So again, the second answer the Gemara said, that to resolve the contradiction between the two Mishnahs, is that yes, everyone holds that there are those that are makbid and those that are not, and therefore regarding our Mishnah of Mammon, Igo Lekula, and that Mishnah of Issa, Igo Lechomer. Vinam, he says a third approach. He says, La'olam lo'ikapti. Truth is, as we see in our Mishnah, that by just putting things in a courtyard that are not permanent, a person is generally not particular. And therefore, in our Mishnah, we said that it's not going to be a chazaka in the Reisha. Now, the same thing actually would apply regarding the halacha of vows, which regards the Mishnah over there. Generally, we would say that you are permitted to go into a shared courtyard and just stand there because the partner is not particular, and that would not be considered being nenefamim. Now, but then the thing is, so Bahamani, so who's the Mishnah, who's the Tana of the Mishnah, Masechet Nedarim, that's very stringent regarding vows, where even something that's not really so much benefit because generally is not makbid on Hamada, it's still going to be forbidden? That's Rebbe Lazahi. That Mishnah is going like Rebbe Eliezer. The Tana like Linda Bryson. Rebbe Eliezer, I mean, he says, Afila Vitur Asa B'mudahana. Even something which people are usually very casual about, in the sense they're usually forgiving about, even so, regarding the Dharm, that is forbidden. So for example, let's say a regular person takes a neder of forbidding himself to have benefit from a certain store. Now, then this regular individual needs to buy stuff from that store. So he sends money to the store to buy from him 100 nuts for a pruta. And that's a lie, because he's not benefiting from him. It's the guy's getting his money's worth. Now, but the store owner adds on one or two extra nuts. That says, Rebbe Eliezer, it's forbidden for that homeowner in that vitor, where the store owner adds a little bit extra, because that's a gift. Now, although that regularly, when any customer comes, the store owner, when he's buying 100, will add on the extra one or two, that's something what's called vitor, because he's forgiving about it, he's easy, but he'll give it to anyone. Still, since it's ultimately a hana, Rebbe Eliezer holds that's going to be forbidden. Now, in contrast, the opinion of the Rabbanon is that it's actually permitted. Because ultimately, the reason why the store owner is adding extra one of two is because of the sale, where he always gives extra one or two, whoever's buying, but it's coming because of the coin. Because had this guy not bought the nuts from this store owner, then the store owner would never have given to this Baal Bais anything. It's all based on the money, and that's why he's giving extra one or two. That's called vitur. So the chum hold its mutter. So therefore it says, Ravina, that therefore there's no contradiction. The Tana of a Mishnah would actually hold the same thing applies to the halacha of Nedarim, that it would be mutter to stand over there, which is like the Reisha of a Mishnah. That Mishnah over there that says it's us, it's going like Rebbe Eliezer holds Vitor is usr, and therefore even though people are not mocked, but ultimately it's still a benefit you're getting standing in this courtyard, and therefore it's going to be forbidden. The Gemara continues related to this halacha of our Mishnah. Amar B'yechen Mishum Ribbeno. He says, Bakol, any type of permanent utility that's in a courtyard, which is like even the halachas of Aresha, which is having your animals stand in the courtyard or putting your ovens or your stoves, which diminish the airspace of the rest of the neighbors in the courtyard. And that says Rebbe Noah that the shutfin ma'akvin zezeh, that the partners, meaning the neighbors in this courtyard, could stop any one of the partners if he wants to go ahead on his own, put his animals in there. The rest of the neighbors can get together and say that we don't want this. Again, as we said in the Mishnah, that, let's say, like one of the interpretations is some people are particular, some not, and therefore we said what's going to establish a chazakah or not regarding just putting stuff there or building, but says Rabbanah, but if they want to protest, they definitely could, and one of the neighbors cannot just start putting stuff in the common courtyard. They take a vote, and if they all say no, he can go ahead himself and say, I want to put my animals there. Chutz mina kvisa, but there is one exception that the Chacham were misakin regarding laundering. That a person, even only one of the neighbors, in contrast, if even all the neighbors say, we don't want laundering in the common courtyard, one of them could say, I don't care, the Chacham gave me the rights to go ahead and launder here in the common courtyard. What's the reason? Why would the Chacham misakin this? Because it's not normal for the Jewish women to degrade themselves by washing their clothing, which is how all the other people do, by the river. Because there they have to go ahead and pull up their clothing a little bit, because they have to go ahead and stand in the river, so they're going to be pulling up their skirts, and they're going to have to uncover their thighs a little bit, but when it comes to wash their clothing, they're in the river. That's not appropriate for the Jewish women, and therefore, we could have tubs of water for them in the common courtyard to do it there, where they don't have to go ahead and debase themselves. That is something Chamor Mesakin, and that's the right of any one neighbor of the courtyard, even if everyone else says we don't want it in our courtyard. Now, related to this idea, the Gemara brings a pasuk in Yeshaya. V'oitzim einav mero'is pera. And regarding someone who closes his eyes from seeing that which is evil. What's this talking about? Where the pasuk there in Yeshaya is talking about someone that's hoilich tzedakah, is someone that does the appropriate things. He's considered a tzaddik, where one of them is where he closes his eyes from seeing bad. So Amr B'chir Barabi says, Zeh she'ein mistakel b'nashim. This refers to someone who does not gaze at women when he's walking by the riverside. At the time when they're standing over the clothing that they're laundering, where again, as we said, they're going to have to pull up their clothing a little bit when they're laundering, that is considered someone that's a tzaddik that closes his eyes from looking at that. Now, the Gemara asks on this, Hey Chidami, what exactly is it talking about when the pasuk praises the individual who closes his eyes, which sounds like, but if he doesn't close his eyes, he's not going to be a tzaddik, but neither is going to be a wicked person. What's the case talking about? Because it sounds like that's a really pious person. What do you mean pious? What, and if he doesn't, then what? If there is another way to go, and instead of that, meaning he can go where he has to get to, not walking by the riverside. And in spite of that, he walks by the riverside, then Rashahu. Then he's a wicked person, even if he closes his eyes, because he shouldn't come near to a situation, rather he should distance himself from sin, whereas the Gemara says, Achul Dav Mem Dal Mabez, a person should distance himself from something that could be repulsive, that's something that could put a stain on his soul. So that shouldn't make him a righteous person. And if there is no other way for him to get where he has to go, that's just what's going on in the streets these days, then Anasu, then it's something beyond his control if he gazes as he's walking. And that is a general theme that Einish Rechem on the Patri, if it's something beyond his control, so then the Torah exempts him. So why does it require for him to close his eyes where the Pasuk is praising him? And praising him sounds like that he should close his eyes, but what do you want from a person? How's he supposed to walk if he's going to have to close his eyes? So says the Gemara, La'ilam delekadachachri. The truth is, we're talking about a situation where there's no other way for him to get where he has to go to except by walking at the riverside. Fafalahachi, and in spite of that, says the Gemara, yes. Mibayle lamenis nafshe, he has to force himself to turn his eyes to the other side. And that's the person that the Pasuk is praising, where yes, if he forces himself and he moves the other way, which might put himself in a difficult situation, it's an einus, what's he supposed to do? He's still considered a chassid, a pious person. That's the pasuk. That's the person that the pasuk is praising, even though there's no way for him to do it, still he looks away. That's going to be a person that's oitzim einu meiz bara. He's considered heilich tzedakah, b'dayv misharim. He's all these praises that the pasuk talks about in the pasuk in Yeshaya. Now, the Gemara continues with many different teachings regarding Rabbanah, who, because we mentioned him just before, regarding the salacha that we said from Yechon and name of Rabbanah, regarding that the neighbors of the courtyard could stop any one of the neighbors from doing something, again, as we said, besides the laundering, which we mentioned incidentally, this concept about them laundering by the waters. So now the Gemara says many different teachings with Rabbi Yechon and Rabbanah. So Baimene Rabbi Yechon and Rabbanah, Rabbi Yechon asks from Rabbanah the following question. He says, Chalik shel tamal chacham ketzad. What signifies the shirt of a Talmudic scholar? This cloak that they would wear. So on that says Rabbanah, is kol she'in besari niru mitachtav. As long as his flesh cannot be seen underneath, meaning, which as Rashbam translates, where their shirts were very long, they didn't wear, they had these robes, so where his tunic goes all the way down to his feet, so that you don't see that he's walking barefoot, that's considered what a Talmudic scholar, he totally is tzenua, modest, that you don't see any part of his body, even his bare feet, where his tunic goes all the way down to the ground. So he continues asking Rabbi Yechanan, to Rabbi Noah, Talis, which that's the outer cloak, which covers on all the clothing that he's wearing, Shal Talmud Chacham Ketzad, how, what signifies that of a Talmudic scholar? It says, Kol Shein Chaluki Nir Mitachtav Tafach, if the tunic, which is beneath the talis, is not seen at least more than the tefach, where it's that long that it goes, that the talis goes all the way down, basically till within the tefach of the tunic, which the tunic is all the way down to the ground, that's considered a talis of a Talmud Chacham, where Rashbam says, and for sure, if the talis would go all the way down to the ground, like the chaluk, like the tunic, where it's even more modesty, that for sure is considered within the category of a talis of a Talmud Chacham. So Rabbi Yechanan continues asking Rabbi Noah, Shulchan shel Talmud Chacham ketzad? What does a table of a Talmud Chacham look like? So he says, it's shnei shlishi gdil, two-thirds of it is covered with the tablecloth. And the reason why the tablecloth is called gedil, because gedil means to weave, and it's just a refined way of saying the tablecloth, where you have two-thirds of the width of the table that are covered with a tablecloth, which are near the people who are eating, which they use to clean their mouth with, like some type of a napkin, and also to put the bread on it. V'shlish galoi, and the outer third of the table is uncovered, and that's to be able to put v'alav ka'aretz v'yarek, where you put all the dishes and all the vegetables and all the cups, so that the tablecloth should not get dirty and that all the food should not get ruined. So you put all the dishes there on the outer part, from on the part of the table, that third which is not covered with the tablecloth. And v'tabatoi, the ring of the table, because in Talmudic times they used to make the rings at the edge of the table, where they would then fold up the table and hang it from that ring, that should be mibachutz. That should be from the outer part of the table, not the inner part where the people are eating, as the Gemara is going to shortly explain this halacha. Because first the Gemara asks, that actually the ring is on the inner part, meaning near the place that the people are eating, not the outer part. So the Gemara, lekash, is not a difficulty. One of them is talking about that there are children that are eating next to their fathers. There you have to put, since the children are eating next to the fathers by the table, so you have to put the part which has the ring connected to it on the outer part, because maybe the child is going to be playing with the ring, as children are wont to do, and then it's going to shake the whole table and everything is going to come toppling over. Ha, delekiy nuka. But when there are no children, then you make the ring on the inner part, and you don't have it around to the outer part, because the problem is that the waiter, the attendant, might hurt himself on the ring that's sticking out of the table on the outer part when he's coming and going to come and serve, and he might hurt himself. So when there's no children, actually, that's when you have the ring on the inner part. Or if you want, you could say, actually, both are talking about when there are no children. But Lekash is still no difficulty. When there is an attendant, then you make the ring on the inner part, again, as we said, because the waiter might hurt himself if you keep it on the outer part. Ha, deleka shama. And here, when there's no waiter, then you make it on the outer part and not on the inner part, because still, all those, the people that are sitting, might hurt themselves if it's on the inner part. Now, however, that's what the Gemara is saying, but when there's a waiter, you'd rather make it on the inner part by those who are sitting and not on the outer part, because at least those who are sitting can be careful when they're basically staying stationary from the ring more than the attendant who's constantly coming or going, and he could really injure himself more than the ones who are just sitting, where we'd rather have it on the inside than the outside. More if you want, you could say, actually, both are talking about that there are attendants and there's still no difficulty, because ha be mama. During the daytime, you should have the ring on the outer part, because then the waiter could see it, and he could be careful, and he won't get hurt, rather than having it on the inside, because then those who are sitting could hurt themselves, because it's still very tight and narrow, whereas the waiter could see, and he could just stay clear of it, then you'll have it on the outer part. But at the nighttime, when it's dark and the waiter can't see, then he's going to hurt himself, rather have it on the inside where the people are eating than on the outer part. And moreover, but b'shalama oretz daimu, so that's how the table of a Talmud Chacham looks like. But the table of an ignoramus, his is comparable, as we can see in the Talmud Aleph, limadura, to like a bonfire, where you have the kederis makivas, and you have plates that are surrounding that, which is the same type of how they would cook, where that's how his table looks like, which have the, in other words, by these fires, they would have plates around and the fire in the inside. So to his table, you have the tablecloth and the bread. You have that in the inside and you have the plates surrounding it all around. That's how his table is, unlike the Talmud Chacham, who has it organized in the way as we described it. He has it all around and the food in the inside, where everything could just get ruined and doesn't have the same etiquette as the Talmud Chacham. Continues Rabbi Yechanan to Rabbi Noah, and Mita Shel Talmid Chacham Ketzad. What does the bed of a Talmid Chacham look like? It's Kol She'en Tachtah. It's that there's nothing beneath it. Ela Sandalin B'Maisachama, except for Sandalin in the summertime, where the reason why it's under the bed is because that's where he's storing it until the wintertime when he's going to need his Sandalin. And U'Minalin B'Maisach Sham, and he has Min'alin in the winter months under his bed. Because as the Gemara says in Sechet B'Sachim, Talmid Chacham does not have anything else underneath his bed. Because, although that's a good place to store food, but as the Gemara says in B'Sachim, Kufid Beis Amin Aleph, food beneath the bed, even if it's covered with metal, there's still an evil spirit that rests on it. So therefore, he doesn't keep any food underneath his bed. But since it's normal to wear Min'olin, which are soft shoes, in the summer months, and sandalin, which are hard shoes in the winter months because of all the tit, of all the mud. So therefore, in the summer months, when he's not using his sandalin, that'll have under his bed. Or in the winter months, his menalim, the soft shoes, he'll have it under his bed, but nothing else will he have underneath his bed because of the ruach ra. Whereas b'shalama aretz, but avayin neremis, daim la'itza balas. Beneath his bed is like a jumble bumble of stuff that are stored over there. Now the reason is Eitzer is where things are stored, but Balus is like the word as we find in Masechta Shabbos, Isa Balusa, which is a mixed up dough, because that's what a dough is. It's mixed from many different types of things, with water and flour and salt and all these different things. So in other words, he stores a bunch of different things underneath the bed of Ama Aretz, because he puts everything there. He puts utensils, he puts food, unlike a Talmid Chacham, who doesn't have anything else. That's the difference between the bed of a Talmid Chacham and of Ama Aretz.